Hello, hello, my loves. Welcome back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, Elle Ariel, and we can be found at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobspodcast with an S dot com. Jobs with an S, not podcast with an S. Hope everyone is doing well. If you are listening to us on one of the streaming platforms, we always love it if you could give us some stars, give us some feedback, show us some love on one of those platforms so more and more people can find out about our little podcast. That's right. We're all about talking to the movers and shakers and innovators in the music biz today from all aspects of the music industry, finding out exactly how they got their music job. Last episode, I had the pleasure of speaking with Jeff Lanier of Chesky Records, which is an independent Grammy Award-winning audiophile label. That's a big one. He walked us through his career trajectory starting at Drexel. He actually worked for Roadrunner Records while still at Drexel and into the world of A&R and music management and recording engineering and just all these different facets before he got the job as label manager at Chesky. So really, really cool if you want to find out more about A&R, if you're a band that's trying to be discovered. He's also gives some really, really good tips and knowledge about how to be discovered. So go on back and listen to that episode if you haven't had a chance to already. This week, I have the wonderful pleasure of introducing y'all to Ella Gregg, who is the founder, one of the co-founders of 321 Artists, an artist management and development company in the UK. And she's all about new music. She's all about emerging artists. So we're going to hear a lot from her. But before we do that, here's a track from Lucy Mayer, one of Ella's artists, called Being Pretty Was Fun. Here we go.
Mama said I lost weight, you look good, no, my mind's a wreck and I should have more control. Winter comes and I can't find my
So mind. Hey Ella, welcome to Hey How'd You Get That Music Job?
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking the time. I'm so grateful we were able to connect. So tell me about your first memories of music. I always love to hear about what kind of households people grew up in terms of their exposure to music.
Yeah, I mean, my dad is so into music. He plays everything. I remember in the car, any car journeys we had, like, the highlight for me and my brother was just listening to music. And there's like artists in the UK called like Tiny Temper, Plan B, who are kind of like on the grime spectrum. But my dad was all over it. He used to be quite a cool dad. I think a lot of my friends liked being in the car with my dad because he was quite a cool dad. The music he played was not what you'd expect from a dad. Which was great. And I think growing up, I remember being the person at school who had all the latest music on their phone and being the one that, I don't know if it was in the, big in the US, but in the UK, a huge thing was Bluetoothing tracks to each other and being like, I always used to have like the best. I was the one that I was, oh, Ella Gregg's got that one. You should ask her if she can send it to you, kind of thing. So in terms of music, like, I had a really, I guess it was quite focused, a sense of like music taste. I was very much brought up with like the top 40 chart music. And it wasn't until, it was about maybe 14, 15 that I kind of discovered new music. And I was so excited. I couldn't believe that I was like finding music that no one else knew about. I just loved having that you've found like a secret that no one else really knows. And I think that's where my love for new music came from, because I just loved, it was like being part of this community that, you know, no one really knew a lot about. But I think new music was still, the social media was growing, and I think because of that, new artists was kind of coming out and realizing that they could make music and get it to a wide audience on social media. And I think there were so many new artists around. It just was so exciting. And I think that's where my love for new music came from.
How did you discover them? Like, what was your main source for discovering new music?
So I first discovered new music actually through an actor from one of my favorite TV shows at the time, in maybe like 2011, 2012. Live streaming was really popular, in especially through a channel called Twitcam. And over the summer, the actor who I really liked started doing loads of live streams with loads of different, like loads of his friends. And one of his friends was this rap artist who I started then researching and I followed on social media. And that's how I first started hearing about new music. And I think, you know, it's all about kind of who everyone knows, and through one artist, I was then able to discover the next one, and from then the next one. And it kind of spiraled just like that. And I think, looking back, it's so fascinating to see how it's like a big web, all these artists, because everyone knows everyone, especially in their areas, like in their cities and towns. The music scenes are often quite close, especially in the UK. So I think it is like a spider's web where everyone just knows everyone, and it kind of goes from one person to the next, to the next, to the next. So that's how I first kind of got into new music, and I knew that that was kind of my passion. Like, I absolutely loved going to really small gigs. I mean, my other experience of gigs had always been like big arenas and big stadiums, and to go to tiny little venues in the city was really exciting. And just, you get to have such a good relationship with these emerging artists, because they really do appreciate the support that you give. So that was always really rewarding, knowing that you're going to go and travel and see this artist perform, and you'll be able to meet them afterwards and things like that. It was really, really exciting.
I want to hear your take on the exposure of new music. Do you feel like the UK, what would I call it? Like, do you feel like the UK powers that be, you know, i.e. radio, record labels, that type of thing, do you feel like they truly support new and emerging artists, or is it kind of tough to really break in, or what's your take on that?
I think it's a mixture of the two. I think it's not difficult to tell. There isn't a lot of money in music at the moment, especially in the UK. So I think for that reason, maybe some of the record labels just aren't putting too much trust into emerging artists, because unfortunately that's not really where the money's at. I think a lot of radio, they kind of know their audience, and I know a lot of radio stations in the UK just aren't that interested in new music. They want the music that's going to bring audiences back, and they want everything to be quite familiar. But I do think a lot of blogs, especially in smaller ones, do still really appreciate emerging artists and fully support them. And there are quite a few bloggers and like magazines and things that really are still discovering and showcasing new music. I think they could be doing more. But I just think there's so many new artists and new bands out there that it would be impossible to make everyone happy, if that makes sense. I think there's so many opportunities, but there's also just so many people fighting for the opportunities. And there's only so many artists that a blog can write about, or, you know, a label can release. And I think that's what makes it more difficult. And I think it's so easy at the moment to make a band, you know, to decide I'm going to be in a band. And I think because social media is so accessible, so many people are like, yeah, start a band, let's make an Instagram, let's make a Twitter account, we'll play gigs here and there. And I think because it's been so easy for people to, you know, showcase their music and try to be discovered on social media, I think they're all fighting for the same opportunities, and that's why it's becoming hard. So it's great that everyone is trying to, you know, have their shot and experiment within the music industry in the UK. But I do think because of that, and because of how easy it's becoming, it just means that there's less opportunities available, which I think is a shame. But I think also, you know, the opportunities are there. You just have to kind of, and the artists that do their research and dig a bit deeper are normally the ones that achieve more. So yeah, I think they're doing the best job they can, really.
And here's a question from like a very obnoxious American. Do you feel like if you're an artist in the UK or Europe, that matter, your goal is to make it big in the US?
I don't think so. I think the dreams and goals for artists has changed dramatically. I think if you ask artists 10 years ago what their goal was, it would be just to be signed by a label and, you know, to have that shot on Facebook of you signing, you know, that agreement. But I think now it's, I think people are coming to terms with the fact that the music industry is changing, and it's the goals that you have got to change with the times. I don't think an artist now wants to be, you know, that big in America kind of thing. I think a lot of artists appreciate how difficult that is, and I think the music scene and the audience in the UK is completely different compared to America. And I think it's, like I said, I think times have really changed, and I think artists, obviously, they want to be known as far as they can, but I don't think people are now pinpointing going, yep, we have to make it in America to have made it. I think people have just different goals now. And I think it's really interesting just to see how the music industry across the world really is changing.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel like being in the UK as well, I mean, obviously like Brexit and all that crap notwithstanding, do you feel like there's more cross-pollination with more European bands or artists or that kind of thing in the UK?
I think there is. I think there's a lot more experimenting and there's a lot more acceptance to music, I think, especially in the UK. You know, festival lineups now are so much more varied than compared to like 5 or 10 years ago. And I think people really are just ignoring, you know, I think people are ignoring what they think people want from events or from festivals or from, you know, from blogs or from labels. I think people really are just experimenting and showcasing the music that is out there. And I think music is changing, and I think the type of music that's being released is a lot more people are taking it as seriously. And I think, you know, there really is a lot more music out there that people might be like, whoa, what is this? Like, and I think that's just, it's a really great thing to be part of. I think being a part of the music industry at the moment is just so exciting, because you just don't know what's going to end up in your inbox. Like, and you know, you get such a variety of artists on a lineup, and I think that's really exciting. And I think that's something that is going to continue and become a lot more apparent. People are being really experimental with the music they listen to now. People are taking a lot more risks. It's not just the chart music anymore. There's, especially in the UK, you know, the rise of grime music is just one example, because, you know, 10 years ago you wouldn't have that in the charts. Like, and now chart in the UK is now completely like overruled by it. And I think it's just so exciting to have that variety and acceptance for new music, no matter what it is or where it's from.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And I guess what I would say similarly in my neck of the woods in LA, it's the dominance of Latin music. You know, I mean, in California, Latin Americans are basically the majority. So that comes across obviously in like food and, you know, and culture and music and all the different kinds of Latin music. My God, I mean, there's so many different kinds and styles and dances, and I find it so exciting to be kind of, you can't help but be immersed in that culture out here.
Yeah. And like, as an artist yourself, like, have you noticed that the music around you and other artists around you is changing? And or like, how is it as an artist for you in America? Like, is there like much variety? Or
Well, here's the funny thing. I find that the industry, and you probably have the same experience what you were saying about in the UK, like in the industry, it tends to be pretty homogenous and pretty boring because it takes a while for a new and emerging, like there's obviously like a whole scene in any kind of music. If you were like into, I don't know, like goth PC music, chances are there's like 10 bands in LA that do that. But in terms of like sort of the meat of the industry, you're really not going to get that type of cross-pollination and difference. You kind of have to step outside the industry, go to the different neighborhoods, go to the different areas outside of like Hollywood proper. And then it's crazy. Then yes, absolutely. It's everything you could ever possibly dream of. And I mean, obviously we have, you know, this incredible hip hop population and history in, you know, South LA. And then, like I said, we have this huge burgeoning Latin music culture and communities in LA. We've got Koreatown with like K-pop, you know what I mean? So, and I'm sure it's the same in the UK, but it's like, you literally have to get out of the mainstream and out of the industry to see these incredibly exciting mashups and cross-pollinations happening.
Yeah.
So back to you. Tell me, did you, because I'm trying to think, like, would you call yourself kind of an influencer, like almost like a new music influencer, because people were coming to you basically to expose them to new music, etc.?
Yeah, I think when I was about 15, 16, and I was really involved in the music industry in terms of new music. I was so passionate about it. I just knew that it was something that I was just really, really interested in. And I found a really nice core of a group of artists who I just really believed in, and I really felt appreciated by. And I would definitely, use my social media to promote the artists and, you know, just engage with them. And, you know, my followers on Twitter especially were growing, like, rapidly, because I think it's just because I was showcasing music that people weren't really familiar with. And I think having that, you know, following a page that was going to be tweeting about new music was really exciting. And this was before, like, I think this is before Spotify's, like, New Music Friday or, you know, the Discover Weekly thing. I think it was kind of like an equivalent to that, but, like, a lot less formal. And it was just kind of like one girl from the UK just posting about music that she was enjoying. And I think that just interested people. And I think I spent a lot of time and energy promoting these artists and helping them gain followers or gain views on their videos. And I think for an emerging artist to have that, it's like gold dust, because it's basically, you're basically getting a PR campaign without paying for one. You know, you're getting real people tweeting your music to other real people, and you're getting organic growth. You're getting seen by more people without really having to do much yourself as an artist. It's the people around you are believing in you and therefore sharing it with people because they want you to succeed. And I think that's kind of what I spent a while doing, was just, you know, helping different artists out. And then other people were messaging me, oh, can you share this? Can you share that? And I kind of got weekly requests, and I would post as many as I could. And I think, I mean, influencer might be a bit strong, but I think people definitely taking notice of what I was doing in terms of the work we did with new music. And that's actually how I got my first role in the music industry, is because people were watching me. And then I was scouted for my first job in the music industry when I was 17, which I was very, very lucky to get.
Well, luck meets opportunity, because you were working very hard. Even if it was a labor of love, you were working really hard. Before we get into that, I'm just curious, were you also creating playlists that were, you know, on YouTube or anything like that, pre-Spotify? Or
I wasn't, no. I think looking back, I probably should have, but it wasn't something that I had thought of doing. And it was because I was like 16, 17 years old, and I didn't really understand things like that. You know, I had my own playlist that I listened to, but I hadn't thought of, oh, let's make a playlist that will really benefit their, you know, their numbers and their engagement. I hadn't really thought about it. I think it's because a lot of people who aren't in the music industry just don't understand the importance of small things like that. It's like one of my artists recently, we were trying to get people to pre-save their track on Spotify. And, you know, to some people, that's just a bit like, oh, it's just like, it's there to be a bit quicker for you and you could pre-save it earlier and then you'll definitely have it on the day. But other people are just going to be like, I'll just find it on when it's released. But little do they know that pre-saves are actually really important on Spotify, because it really helps the Spotify curators see which tracks are going to be like popular, and then they add them to different playlists the more pre-saves you have. So it's things like that. But if I knew that adding their tracks to playlists was going to benefit them, then I would have, but I just didn't have that knowledge. So I think it's interesting, like looking back, I probably should have, but it's interesting what you learn as you go along, especially in the music industry.
Yeah, but it obviously didn't hurt your chances, because then you got scouted. So tell us about that. What happened?
Yeah, so there was a company in the UK called Secret Sessions, and it was a platform for emerging artists who sign up and make a profile, and then if they were successful, they would be offered different opportunities. It might be to play at a gig, it might be to record a session and be put on the YouTube channel, it might be to do some work with some brand. So there's quite a variety of things that they do. And it was, I'd literally just left school. I was kind of not really sure what I was going to be doing. And then I got scouted by the founder and asked if I'd like to do an 8-week internship over the summer. And I was like, yeah, it sounds great. Like, it's with new music. And I was like, definitely worth doing. And at that point, I hadn't really thought about a career in the music industry, purely because I didn't really know how to get into it. I thought I'd have to go to university or study in school and things like that, which I hadn't. So I hadn't really thought about having a job in the music industry until it was offered to me in terms of the internship. And I was like, actually, it'd be really, really cool. So I started working at Secret Sessions over the summer, and my job was basically to scout artists and get them to sign up to the program. And because of all the work I'd done previously and the knowledge I already had of emerging artists, I signed up like 100 in the first month, just because I just knew so many artists, and so many artists were so willing to get involved. And it was kind of the case of, well, if Ella's involved, then it's definitely something we should be involved in, which I think was really, really nice, how, you know, I could give something back to them. So I did the 8-week internship, and then at the end I was kind of like, okay, what happens now? And then Harriet was like, oh, do you want to stay? And I was like, yeah, sure. So I ended up staying there for 18 months, and it was the most incredible opportunity for me to really just learn. I spent every day learning. I didn't really know a lot about the music industry apart from I loved music. So this job really allowed me to learn more. I was engaging with managers, PR companies. I was writing blogs. I was putting on events. I was curating gig lineups. I was working with brands, making playlists. So loads of different tools that I was kind of building, which I was so lucky to have. And I absolutely loved it. Like, every day I was speaking to a new band or a new artist, and I really made a point of getting to know everyone who I was working with, just because it just makes them feel that much more appreciated. And like, not just, because with any job like that, you have targets. So of course you have a certain amount of number of artists that you need to sign up each month. And it wasn't like I'd get into trouble if I didn't hit that target, but it was a really nice for me to have that, like an achievement at the end of the month, to know that I've reached my target kind of thing. And I didn't want each artist to feel like they were just like an extra one, extra number. And I really, really did enjoy engaging with so many different artists and hearing about all their different stories and paths that they've taken. And also, it was just such a wide variety of music, because it was so, there was not just one genre we focused on. It was like all genres, which was really, really exciting. And I had a really great time kind of working out the music industry. And I was only 18 at the time, so I was still a little baby, but I was still kind of, I felt I was making a difference, and that was really important for me.
I'm curious too, because having sort of this outside the mainstream outsider looking in to the business and the industry, did you come up with any hacks or things that you observed that you were like, you know what, there's a better way to do this, or wow, this is really archaic. Hopefully they'll move more in this direction and be more efficient. Was there anything like that that sort of came up for you being such a newbie on the scene?
I think one of the things was the lack of networking. So the Secret Sessions was an absolutely wonderful company, but one thing that they were missing was the whole networking thing, because they had like thousands of artists on this program who were all doing the same thing. They were all struggling with the same things. They all had questions in the same areas, and they were all kind of fighting the same battle. And I said to Harriet, like, why don't you just bring them all together? Why don't you just, you know, chuck them all in a room, you know, let them wander around, talk to each other, ask each other questions. And Harriet really trusted me with it and was like, if you want to do that, you can organize it yourself, like, go for it. So we set up these artist meetups, and I remember the very first one we did, I was so worried that A, no one was going to turn up, and B, it just wasn't going to be right. I think some artists can get, I know with me, if I'm scrolling through social media and I see like an artist manager or like a band doing really, really well, sometimes that can be quite overwhelming. And I didn't want all these artists to be in a room and for artists to think, oh, they're doing so much better than me, or oh, I wish I could have got that opportunity kind of thing. And I didn't want that. But the artists that we had, who I invited some, and we just put the opportunity out on social media, and the artists that came were all so enthusiastic and passionate, and they all wanted to get to know everyone. They all shared each other's numbers, and they just really took to the idea. And, you know, some of them went on to work on tracks together in future. Some of them ended up, you know, sharing contacts and being like, oh, this guy recorded my music video, like, you should use this guy. Like, and they're just all helping each other out. And it was so nice to see that actually there was a gap in the market where it needed to be done. And so many people came up to me afterwards, like, I can't believe that I've never been to one of these before, because I feel so much more energized and like I really can actually succeed with it. So I think that surprised me quite a lot, because I genuinely thought that would have already been a thing, you know, that artists would interact with each other and network with each other. So I think, yeah, I think that was the main thing that surprised me in terms of what I thought already existed but didn't.
No, that's a wonderful point. And it reminds me of, we just had the ASCAP Expo here in LA, and they do have, I will say, they do have wonderful mixers and meetups and get-togethers and opportunities for emerging artists and songwriters, et cetera, to perform. But a lot of it, and again, I think it's demand driven, but a lot of it, sort of the main thrust of it, is panelists on a stage, and then you're in the audience. So it's perpetuating that sort of us versus them. And like, they're They've made it. Yeah. They're at Nirvana and you're down here. And if you're lucky, they may answer a question or they may talk to you, but it was very, and again, I think that's, I don't think it's ASCAP's fault or anything like that. And I think, again, the panels can be amazing and great sources of information, but it's also kind of the industry in general, right? It's
yeah.
like, you're down there, we're up here. We've made it. We have all the knowledge and contacts and you're down there. And like I said, if you're lucky or we give you some hints, maybe you'll make it someday where we are. And I love what you're saying where it's like, let's make it an equal playing field. Let's make it a place in which we're not all coming from a place of lack, but we're coming from a place of, I can help you. You can help me. I've got resources and contacts that you could use and vice versa. So I love that.
Yeah. We kind of have what you're saying in the UK. So we have a lot of events, like you were saying, that have the panels that have, you know, the people that, like you say, will sit on the stage with their microphones and they'll have the audience looking up at them. But we actually, one of the things we do have, which is really, really nice, is a lot of these events have a meet the industry thing. So I did one recently. I did one last year, actually. And it was, there was about 50 industry people in a room. And emerging artists could just queue up and they would be sat with, they'd come in the room and they would sit down at the table and have 10 minutes speaking to the industry one-on-one. And it was really, really nice. So there was such a variety of people in there. I mean, there was the heads of record labels, there was music lawyers, PR companies, consultancy people, there was artists like who had been really successful. And for that opportunity for an artist to get 10 minutes with this person, like, they could be sat in front of, you know, head of A&R at Virgin, and that would be the most incredible opportunity for an artist. And then you might get Ella Gregg from Free to an Artist and might be a little disappointed, but...
never.
but yeah, and to have those 10 minutes with one-on-one with this person who can really give you just the top advice. And I think it's just so important. I had another event recently. I did the same similar kind of thing. And we were sat on a table with, so it was myself and my co-founder and then a lovely girl called Callie, who was from another record label in the UK. And there was four other chairs on our table and four people would come and sit. And we had another 10 minutes with those people. And again, they could just get advice from the industry straight from their mouths. And I think it's just such an important aspect of new music to be open and to have insight from industry professionals. And we'll probably talk about it later, but that's what we kind of do at 321. So we have a blog called 321 Artist Meets that will be a conversation with an industry professional. Just because I just feel like it's so important that, like you say, it's not us versus them. It's everyone is equal. And that's always been really, really important to me.
I love that. So yeah, let's get into your business. And I want you to walk us through, you know, the very beginnings. Like, how did you come up with the concept for the business? And then what steps did you take?
Okay, so when I was at Secret Sessions, I discovered a band called Blushes, who I absolutely fell in love with straight away. It's actually quite embarrassing. I was a bit of a fangirl, and I shouldn't have been, but they were just so good. And I knew that I was going to be a fan of them. And I started speaking to them, and they were just really, really, really nice people who just genuinely just wanted to have fun. So I was introduced to their manager at the time, and he kind of wanted a meeting just to talk about Secret Sessions and see what I could do for Blushes. And then the next day he messaged me being like, oh, I love your passion and enthusiasm. We'd really love you to have you part of the team. So artist management is definitely something that I'd never considered going into, purely because, again, I didn't really know a lot about it. And I think I hadn't had any education on it, so I thought I wouldn't really be qualified to do it. So I started working with Blushes and their management team, and their manager wasn't really sure what he wanted me to do. He just knew that he wanted me to be part of it. So I started doing their social media and marketing and things like that. And then I went into booking their gigs. Now, let me tell you, I was not good at booking gigs. I didn't know where to start. I didn't know who I was going to be emailing, because this isn't something that I really did at Secret Sessions. The only gigs that we booked were our own shows. We didn't book those for other artists. So it was a bit of a learning curve. I really had to learn very, very quick. And I was very, very lucky that I'm quite outgoing in the way that I will openly ask for help. So, you know, I contacted a lot of artist managers and other booking agents, just saying, look, can I have a couple of pointers? Like, can we just jump on the phone and just check I'm doing the right thing? And I've always been very open about asking for help. And a lot of people in the industry will really give you their time if you asked for it. I think it's because everyone started from the bottom, and I think everyone just wants to help everyone out. So the first few gigs I booked for Blushes probably weren't great, but, you know, I made sure they were paid. They got money, so that was fine. But after a couple of months, their manager kind of just started floating in a way. I think it was because I was booking their gigs, I was kind of like the one telling them all the information and, you know, making sure they were doing the right things. And I think I probably started managing the band without really realizing I was managing the band. So their manager kind of called it a day and was like, I'm done. I'm going to go off. So I started managing Blushes. So 3-2-1 kind of came about because Blushes started to do really, really well. And I was like, I'm the one getting them these opportunities. I want to put my own stamp on it. So I stopped managing them under the company that they were being managed under. And I set up 3-2-1 Artists, and basically just so I could manage Blushes under my own name. So 3-2-1 Artists, the thought process was, we knew that we wanted to work with emerging artists and we wanted to help them kind of launch into, help them get everything together and help them launch into their career. So the 3-2-1 is kind of like a spin-off on like 3-2-1 Liftoff. And our logo is a rocket. And I think it all just symbolizes, you know, the processes you have to go through in order to get to that point where you can, you know, lift off in a rocket. Like, there's a lot of planning and a lot of things behind the scenes that go on, and a lot of care and attention. And I think that's kind of what 3-2-1 Artist is. It's a platform to allow artists to kind of get everything together before they're ready to kind of launch into their career properly. And I think 3-2-1 Artist is such a, you know, I know I set it up, but I just think it's a really special place for artists. And I think because myself, I didn't have any education in music, in the music industry. I started from the very, very bottom, and I learned everything that I now know. And our co-founder, Jacob, he's been in bands since he was about 15. Again, hasn't had any education in it. He's just kind of been an emerging artist since the age of 15. And he knows the struggles. He knows he's been there himself. He knows the feeling of, you know, when it can sometimes be quite overwhelming and it can be quite difficult to get your head around. And I think for us, that's why we wanted to create a platform where, you know, everyone's kind of in the same boat and that everyone's still learning. And we just wanted to provide artists with the opportunity to learn. I think that's the main thing. And I think education is just so important. In the UK, I mean, there isn't a lot of opportunities to learn about the music industry. And I think in school, I was always under the impression that if you wanted a career in music, it was to be a musician. And I think it's really important for us that we could kind of change that outlook. And like, we have done some work in schools already, actually, but work in schools and education is something we're definitely really, really keen to do, just because I just don't think there's enough in education to kind of encourage people to get involved in the music industry. And I think it can be quite daunting. So yeah, education is definitely very important to an artist.
I like that a lot. And I do think that here's my take. I think that the music industry everywhere is going through such an upheaval and a state of flux with, you know, everything that's happened over the past even just 5 years, and the move to streaming and the democratization of, like you were saying earlier, like anyone with a guitar and an Instagram account suddenly thinks that they can be the top. But I actually think that someone like you with, and I was saying this earlier, like sort of that you didn't have the education, that you were kind of the outsider looking in. I actually think that is so invaluable, especially as like music and tech continue to sort of move forward, because it's the Wild West. So anything that you had knowledge of decades of the music industry, that no longer applies.
Definitely. I think the music industry is just changing so quickly. And I think especially artist management, I don't think you can be taught how to be an artist manager without being an artist manager. Like, I can't imagine going to, you know, seminars on how to look after a band. It really is something that is just so personal. And, you know, artist management is nothing like what I thought it would be. But artist management is hard. You know, there's a lot of times where you're just completely under pressure. Like, you put yourself under so much pressure because you think, you know, the artist is expecting the world of you, when really they're not. But, you know, and you kind of build this like bond with your artist, which I don't think you can be taught how to be an artist manager. It's something that you just develop and you have to learn as you go, because it's such a special relationship. You know, this person or this band who, like, I'm so passionate about making music, basically put all their trust in you, and you have to have that special bond and understanding, like, in order to do a good job, because it takes a lot, and it takes a lot of trust and time and energy. I think the music industry is changing so much that, you know, learning about the music industry in schools is not working at the moment. Just like you say, I think it's just not relevant. I think that's why I didn't consider studying music. I just didn't. I think I'm one of these people that's like to get stuck in. I'd rather just figure it out as I went along, which isn't always the best way to go, boys and girls. Don't take life advice from me.
Well, it's interesting too, though, because I think definitely, like, hooray for music schools and hooray for music business programs. And I know that there certainly are innovative and highly valuable programs and certifications out there. But I think, and I see this with panels, it's like nobody knows what the fuck is going on, and nobody knows what the fuck is coming down the line, because you'll see these panels like change from year to year, where they're like, music supervisors and sync opportunities, this is it. And then the next year it's like Spotify playlists and Rap Caviar, this is it. And then it's like next year it's like video games and like virtual concerts and video games like Fortnite, this is it. Like, nobody knows what the fuck is happening.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know what we're going to teach you about that in school.
No, because it's like you can't keep up. Nobody knows. Like, they just, it's like lemmings. Like, people are a lot of people are just like, well, everybody's going this way, everybody's going that way. And I think what a manager like yourself and an artist that can trust that is looking for the outside of the box, outside of the mainstream opportunities. And I think the very fact that you're specializing in new music already puts you ahead of the game, because you already know what it's like to blaze a path, go the road not taken, take the opportunity that doesn't seem to be 100% guaranteed or has, you know, a return on investment. However, you know, this works, and I have a gut feeling about this, and I know that this opportunity is going to be lucrative, etc.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the artists that you work with just trust you, and they know that the artists that I work with know that if I say you're not doing this opportunity, even if it appears to be the best opportunity in the world, like, I'm not doing it to ruin your career. I'm doing it because it's the best thing for you.
Yeah. It's so important. That's such an invaluable service that you offer. And just as an example for me, and I'm not going to get into it, but the details, but essentially I was like, should I be doing Facebook ads, right? Like, should I be doing Instagram ads? And, you know, obviously not having a lot of knowledge about it, but reading somewhere and somebody's offering a workshop or somebody's offering a seminar. And I had somebody, she's not a manager, but somebody I trust very much in the business was like, no. She's like, that's not a good opportunity or situation for you right now, maybe down the line a little bit. And I was so grateful because she could have very easily been like, yeah, go ahead, put in like, you know, do $100 a month on Facebook ads and see what happens. You know, she was very direct and said, I understand. And it seems like a valuable opportunity, but I think for you personally, it'd be better to put your energy in your direction in this particular area. And I think you as a manager, I'm sure, give the same type of advice to your artists where you're like, look, I know this is like a shiny red object and it looks really cool and everybody's doing it. But I really think for you personally, you would be better served to go in this direction.
That's like a weekly occurrence for me. I think sometimes like when I worked with Blushes and I said there were some things I said no to, they're like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, why? Like, we need to be doing that. And I think sometimes they're a bit like cautious of my decisions I was making. And I think if they looked back now, they'd be like, actually, yeah, she would know what she was talking about, didn't she? Like, and I think, like I say, like, not everything that's offered to you, it's so easy for a band to be like, yeah, we'll take that gig. Yeah, we'll play that one. Yep, yeah, and that one. And it's just not the best way to go about it. And I think if I'd said yes to every opportunity that Blush has got, I think we'd have been in a very dangerous situation. I think it is just no. And as a manager, you get to know, like, the people that you should be avoiding or the opportunities are a bit too good to be true. But as an artist who really, really, really wants to succeed and has such big dreams and goals, like, some emails can come in and they're like, oh, yes, like, this is it. Like,
right.
And then you have to kind of be the one to explain to them and be like, you know, the mother that says, no, you can't have the ice cream before dinner. Like, you have to be that person. And they might not like you for it and they might get the hump. But at the end of the day, like, I'm telling you, this is the best way to go about it. And I think, you know, like you say, it's just one of those things that comes with being an artist, that you just can't say yes to everything that's offered to you. And I think it's so easy for bands and artists to do that. Which is why at 321, like, we offer like a consultancy service, and which is like, they can either spend like one, 4, 8 hours with us. And some people literally just have the 1 hour. And like, I've had one recently where they were just reading out all the opportunities that that was in their inbox at the time. Just being like, we're at this one. Should we do this? Should we take this one? And like, I think they just want that reassurance from someone that comes across as a professional to tell them whether this opportunity is good or not. And I think it's quite worrying that we're in a situation in the music industry where there's so many companies out there trying to scam artists or try and sell their services and make them look like the best that can be, kind of thing, that people then have to check if they're genuine. I think it's quite worrying that that's a thing. Like, it's not as plain sailing as people imagine. There's a lot of people out there who just really aren't trying to do best for artists. It's quite sad.
Well, absolutely. And I think a perfect example of that is like artists that feel the need to buy followers, or the services that are like, we'll get you this bump, we'll just get you. And, you know, I've had the opportunity come up myself, and my thing is like, I'm sorry, but it's not worth, I understand it and I understand the attraction of it. I was like, but it's not worth me getting kicked off of Spotify or to just get this huge spike. And then in a month it's gone. And then what?
Yeah.
There was absolutely nothing gained from it. And I'm like $50 cheaper.
You know? Yeah. Like, I can't remember who it was, but there was an artist in the UK who they were like a really small emerging artist. They had, I think they had like 500, maybe less, 400 or 500 followers on Facebook. But each and every one of those followers engaged with every single one of those artist posts. And this guy, I really wish I could remember who it was. This guy basically engaged with every single one of these, the people who liked his page, and really built a community. And these 400 or 500 people, every single one of them bought a copy of his album. Every single one of them wanted to buy his merchandise. Every single one of them engaged with all his posts. So his engagement on Facebook was sky high. All his posts were getting hundreds of likes and comments. And he gained so many opportunities because people knew that if he announced that he was playing at a festival, at least 60% of those people were going to then buy festival tickets. And I think it really, really is not about how many followers you have. Although it might look good to some people, it's all about your engagement. And if you've got 10,000 followers, but you know you're getting maybe 9 or 10, you know, engagements to your post, then your followers kind of go out the window because they're not really as beneficial or attractive as your engagement. So yeah, I think the whole buying followers thing is not worth your time.
Yeah, I agree. And I stumbled across a very well-known artist here. She's like pretty much about to be next level. And I was really surprised because her Twitter was like, I was like, oh shit, those are all bots. Because like you said, I mean, all I had to do was look at like 4 or 5 of her tweets and just see how little engagement or likes there was, even though her follower numbers were like through the roof. And I was like, oh shit. Like, and maybe she's just not somebody that really engages a lot on Twitter. I mean, she's still a pretty big artist, but it was just interesting to me. I was like, it's so painfully obvious when, like you said, either you've bought your followers or gotten your followers other than true, pure, sincere engagement. So I've taken up a lot of your time. Quick question about your business. Do you accept clients from the US and other countries besides the UK?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we work with so many different artists, and I think if we didn't accept artists from all around the world, then it would kind of be quite hypocritical of us because, you know, we want to work and help as many artists as possible, regardless of, you know, where you're from or the music that you make. So definitely all our services that we offer are available worldwide. We do a lot of graphic design work. We have a beautiful digital illustrator who does the most wonderful artworks. And yeah, we have loads of different services available. So the website is 321artist.com.
That's great. And then what are the social media handles for people to follow?
Yeah, they are all just 321artists. And then my own is Ella Gregg with 2 G's at the end with an underscore.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Ella. I'm so glad we were able to do this.
Thank you.
So fun having Ella on the show. Thank you so much, Ella. What a great, really cool interview. And I'm excited to see how 321 Artists continues to blow up in the UK and obviously beyond globally. Also, don't forget to check out her website, the company's website, 321artists.com, or follow them at 321artists, or you can follow Ella at Ella Gray. That's 2 L's. What did I say? Ella Gregg. That's 2 L's and 3 G's. So that's how you can remember it. So go ahead and follow her on the Twitter and other social media. Okay, my loves, thus ends another week of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your hostess with the mostest, L. Ariel. You can find me at LARIEL Music on social media. My website is LARIELmusic.com. That's LARIELmusic.com. We are also, as the podcast, on social media at Music Jobs Podcasts. We are on the Instagram and the Twitter, so please follow, like, and, you know, just say hi. I'd love to hear from you. Okay, babies, so have a wonderful, wonderful week. Take good care. Keep on doing what you're doing, and remember, we are going to keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't you give up.